dictators and whatnot. It's hard to free those people and have them live in democracy and not give them an alternative. If they have no jobs, they're going to go to where the jobs are. Right. If the dictator says, well, I have a place where you can work in these mines. Little pay is more than no pay. Go work in the mine. So you have to build up your infrastructure. So if he had just commanded them to do right and that's it, he'd be a lot like a lot of the kings up in the northern 10 tribes of Israel, who might command the people to do what's right, but there's no follow through. Mm-hmm. So while the king's looking, folks will be praising God and doing what's right. And then when the king goes home, they go back to the high places. Yeah. Well, be it Israel, by this time, there was just high places. There was no temple you go to. That's what they do down in Judah. He didn't just command, and then he didn't just take away the other stuff. If he had stopped there and left no other alternative, then the people are left to find that there's a hole in everybody that needs to connect with something bigger than themselves. Mm-hmm. It may be with a group in your community. It may be with a higher power, as they say in AA or NA or whatnot. Or maybe with God himself. Maybe you turn towards spiritualism or idols or mm-hmm. whatever. But there's something inside of everybody that wants to connect with something bigger. Now, there are a few here and there that are hermits and whatnot that want to be by themselves. But even hermits want to connect with nature. Mm-hmm. Or they want to connect with something that's not other people. Mm-hmm. So everybody everywhere needs to connect with something bigger than themselves. And what Asa does, he goes that next step further. He commands them to do right. He takes away the things that focus and press them towards that which is wrong. And then he protects the cities where they are. He builds around those cities, the walls and the fences around the city, so that the people have a place to work, so they can support themselves and their families. They have a place to live without their enemies being right there on their backs. And he takes away the excuse for not worshiping God. Mm-hmm. Okay? So in his three-prong attack, he actually, in everything that he's doing here, he's trying to give everybody a reason. Let me take that back. He's trying to take away all the excuses for not doing what's right. That's a totally different approach than we'd seen from the kings before. Mm-hmm. Because even the good ones before after Solomon, I'll say it was is one yeah. or two. But when we were in Kings, we saw it all the way, all the kings in Israel, not to mention the kings in Judah, because Chronicles focuses more on Judah. But in Israel, the ones that were kind of good or started out good, everybody in Israel ended up wrong. They start off good and they end up wrong. At least here we have someone who starts off well and then they build a foundation so that goodness can continue.
Now, one thing that I noticed too, if you look at how the kings were in relationship to God, at least up until this point, going back to the beginning, what kind of king was Saul in relationship to God? And look what his the following king had to deal with, war, mm-hmm. fightings. What kind of king was David towards God? What happened with his following king? Peace. And then towards the end, Solomon got kind of wayward towards God, starts visiting palm readers and whatnot to get answers or whatever. But he wasn't 100% in it. He learned from his lessons, but still, what followed him, Rehoboam, what did Rehoboam have to do with it? Fighting. Hmm. And because of what he had in place, or his attitude towards God, the following king after him had to deal with war as well. Rehoboam, I would say, had to deal with fighting, mm-hmm. but the war part was more so, no, you're not even going to get to fight. You're going to be overthrown. Mm-hmm. You're going to be put underfoot. Mm-hmm. So this is not going to even be a fight. But the way he was, it seems like the next king just had to deal with the fallen king's mess, mm-hmm. and the fight that happened with Abijah. They had war, but they had victory. But what kind of king was Abijah? And look what Asa is dealing with. Peace. And in the midst of the peace, he was able to build up defenses, what Rehoboam was thinking about doing. But you weren't at war. Mm-hmm. But you, well, actually, you did cause something because of what you said to the people, that y'all gonna be mad that you were ever a part of this. But I'm noticing something like a pattern. Mm-hmm. Where the heart of the king towards God affects the people.
Absolutely.
It mm-hmm. absolutely affects the people. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that have to suffer for it. Or they benefit from it. Mm-hmm. If he does like he should.
But and he has to command them to do it. Because, you know, it's like, just looking at the kings, if we just look at Israel or Judah, we'll look at Judah, because Israel didn't have a lot of them trying to do what was right. But they had to command them to do it. They had to take away the people. It's like they're just, like the song said, prone to wander. You know, it's like they number one, back in Samuel, they wanted a king like everybody else. So they're mm-hmm. looking at the people around them, looking at how they do, what they do. That's what they wanted that. That's how they got a king in the first place.
Right.
Then, it's like they never stopped looking around them, looking at the people around them and what they did. Mm-hmm. And whenever a king, if they wanted to try to bring them back to God, it was hard. They had to do so much to bring them back, but it didn't take much to take them away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I noticed, you know, just like with Jeroboam, just the convenience.
Right.
Convenient for them,
right.
You know, and they just wander on. Yeah, you know, we follow after convenience. It's easier. You don't have to go all the way to Jerusalem. You can go to Dan. You can go to, you know, Bethel. You don't have to go all the way down there. And the people, and it's sort of like we are today. You know, we can get pulled away just on convenience. You mm-hmm. know, if your pastor said to you, you know what, we don't have to worship on Sunday. You know, we just kind of just phone in. On Saturday night, not Saturday night, maybe Saturday morning, just phone in and we'll talk for a few minutes. And people would do it. If they could lay in their bed, mm-hmm. people would do it. They would take, because it feeds the flesh. Because the flesh don't feel like getting up. You know, we don't necessarily feel like getting up on Sunday morning, but we know because we want to worship God and we want to be there and we want to learn, we want to hear from God. Mm-hmm. It's not that hard.
Right.
But when you know, if you feed the flesh becomes strong.
Exactly. And we see here Asa's attitude. As he's going through and as he does everything, whether it's taking away the old landmarks, whether it's building up the cities and whatnot, we find his attitude is one that he's giving all the credit to who? Who?
To God.
And how do you know this? Because he said he built fenced cities. This is verse 6 in Judah.
Mm-hmm.
And he built fenced cities in Judah, for the land had rest. And he had no war those years because the Lord had given him rest. Mm-hmm. Now, there's all this peace. And what we are often tempted to do as humans is take credit for the peace that God has given us.
Mm-hmm.
God will give us peace from our enemies, from our oppressors, or from just our opponents, folks that they're not our enemies in that I want to kill you and you want to kill me. Mm-hmm. But it could be an opponent, somebody who is, I need to step over you to get to my next level. Or you trying to step over me to get to your next level, like at work, coworkers, not your enemies. Mm-hmm. And trying to kill them. What do you do with an enemy? What's the purpose of calling somebody an enemy? To designate them for destruction. Mm-hmm. So that you can have an excuse to take everything in you and put it against them. That's why a person is in. Now, if you're wrestling, like you're on the wrestling team, the person you wrestle is not your enemy. You don't get them in a headlock, you know, and then start punching them in the face. That's pro wrestling. That's fake. That's not real. You know, the point of wrestling, like in school or in college, the point of wrestling is to pin your opponent, to cause him to submit, but not to do bodily harm to him. You can't do locks. You can't do stuff like, you can't do a strangulation. Yeah, you can't use weapons. But when you're in the military and you're out in the field and your enemy comes up, you don't want to just put him in a hold or just pin him to the sidewalk. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, get up, walk up, turn your back on him. You're going to die because his job is to kill you. His job is to kill you. And that's a very important fact to remember. Because the Bible says when we were God's enemies, it was then that he sent his son to save us. He didn't send Jesus when he was in when Adam was in the Garden of Eden, not doing anything wrong, before Eve arrived. Thanks a lot, Eve. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. But when Adam and Eve were in the Garden of Eden, in the beginning in Genesis, God didn't send Jesus to die then. It may have been in the plan, but he didn't send him. There was no point. Nobody to see it. No one to appreciate it. But it was when we were his enemies, when everything in him would be against us. It was at that time that he showed us mercy. What does that tell us about how we should treat people who are against us? Anybody?
So I have a question, or maybe I need a little bit better understanding.
Cool.
When you say that we were an enemy of the Lord, literally, like it says we were an enemy? Because I mean, that's because he loves us. And but are you, when you say enemy, are you meaning like in the term that you just described as destructed to kill? Because we were not serving him, we were destructing ourselves, we were basically not doing what he said, and so the only choice we had was death, so therefore we're enemy in that sense. Not because he looked at his people as we're out to get him, or we're out to purposely defile God, right?
Well, let me ask you this question. If God can be defiled, and he is defiled, does it matter if it's on purpose or not?
No.
Right. The Bible says that sin is anything that's against God's nature. Well, that's not the Bible doesn't say that. That's commentary. What we understand sin to be based on what we've seen in the Bible is things that are against God's nature. Things like murder. God doesn't murder. Things like, and what does murder mean? Murder means an unjustified homicide against a human being. By another, and it's also unlawful because we have capital punishment, which is not considered murder. God doesn't covet. He's not jealous of anybody's stuff. Like if he doesn't like his jacket, and like I'm gonna give him boils and leprosy so I can get the jacket when he drops it. That's against God's nature. So we find these things as sin because they're against God's nature. Sin can't stand in God's presence. It must be destroyed. Because it's so unlike him. And the reason why the Bible says, and is it 5? Therefore being justified by faith? No. Access glory?
Which one?
I'm looking for when we were his enemies, God sent his son.
Romans 5:10.
See, I knew it was 5:10, you say?
For if when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his son, much more being reconciled, we shall be saved by his life.
So God, this is the position that a lot of people who look at Christianity now without the benefit of a historical view of where it came from. This is where a lot of folks are like, I don't see why God would be mad about this or mad about that. In the Old Testament, we look at God, and you ever heard the saying, God was a vengeful God in the Old Testament, and in the New Testament, he's a God of love. Exactly. How would you know it was mercy if God never showed you another side of himself, you know? So he started off, I'll even say harsh, when his law is do this or die. That was the law that God said in the beginning. What's the first commandment ever given in the Bible by anybody to anybody else? Go ahead.
Don't eat from this tree.
Exactly. Don't eat from this tree. God is one who speaks, and what he speaks happens. So in the Bible, in the first chapter in Genesis, it says that God says, let there be light, and there was light. God said he separated the light and the waters and made day and night and land, dry land and not dry land. So God speaks in even nature. We can't find consciousness in nature, in rocks or in light or in stars. We can't find a conscious mind there to communicate with, to make our thoughts be conveyed to them. We have to manipulate nature. Right. But God speaks and nature obeys. No questions, it just obeys. Then God makes man and he does something different with man. He says, unlike nature, when I speak to you, one of the gifts I'm going to give you is the ability to say no. Why would God do that? Because he wants to be chosen by us. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to just be that thing like the sun to a flower. The flower has no choice. When the sun is there, it turns to the sun. Does the sun love the flower? I mean, does the flower love the sun? Who knows? But without the sun, the flower dies. Mm-hmm. So the flower will turn towards the sun when the light comes. God didn't want that from us. He wanted to be our son, but he wants us to choose our son. And the only way we could know that we've chosen him is if we had another alternative. And if another alternative was possible. If there was no alternative and nothing else was possible, it's not a choice. Because consequences make choices significant. So if I choose, like right now, I can write down the letter, I mean the word cat. If I write the word cat, C-A-T, and then I write the word K-A-T right now, as we're talking. As a matter of fact, let me do that. And I'm going to write the word cat. And I chose either C-A-T or K-A-T to write it down here. How important or significant do you think that choice was, the C or the K?
Well, it depends on the perspective, I guess.
Well, just on this conversation, on us talking.
Oh, right, nothing.
Not really significant. No, there's no consequence. Yeah. I mean, I can tell you which one. I wrote K-A-T. But does that matter to you? Has that changed your life? Or no. You know, because the choice has no consequence. Now, if there was a law in the United States that those who spell cat with a K will be executed on dawn of the next day after they're found spelling cat with a K, and then just for giggles, I'm like, guys, guess what I just wrote? K-A-T. And then the police walk in. Sir, what did you just write? K-A-T. I'm sorry. Was that a significant choice? Yes, because the consequence is I'm going to lose my life at dawn. Well, God has given us a choice, me being God or something else. And he said the reason that your choice is significant is because if you don't choose me, you can't be with me forever. The life that you're living now, it's the time that you have to choose me or to reject me. Once this life is over, the time for choosing has ended. So as you live this life, if you choose God, that choice is extremely significant.